for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome into IUP Plus today. Glad you are here. If you're finding us on YouTube or News for Utah Plus, that is our free streaming TV app. We hope you'll tell your friends about
all of our
it.
Friends.
All of our
They'll
friends.
Be our friends so when they start friends. Watching.
It is News for Utah Plus. And we're very glad you found us. Joining me today, Taylor Morgan and Liam Murray. Hi, guys.
I figured that's what it was for since it was just sitting there.
It's just to remind you what station you're on. Just reminding you who you work for.
Okay, great. I'm Taylor Morgan with Morgan May Public Affairs.
And I'm Liam Murray, political science professor up at Weber State University.
Just reminding you who pays your non-pays your bills.
We get paid?
I do. You don't.
Oh, shoot. Okay, let's move on, shall we? So we just had a special legislative session. Obviously, this is the big talker in Utah politics this week. Lawmakers went into a special session in order to push back some filing deadlines so they could buy themselves more time to appeal in Utah's redistricting order. I have so many questions because I feel like the legislature could appeal right now if they wanted to, but some people are telling me that that's not the case. Other people are telling me differently. So I have so many questions. But guys, just give me your high-level take after you saw the headlines come out from last night. I mean, mine is just that nothing surprised me about what we passed. Obviously, you don't go into special session without having the votes already locked down. But that doesn't mean tensions weren't high, and they were, and we saw some of those flare a little bit. Your takeaways.
Yeah, I feel like my takeaway is just we know who's running for office and was recording their campaign ads for their District 1 campaign coming up this year, right? So a little bit, how do I say, the session felt very performative in that regard, right? Like there was not a lot of real conversation happening, maybe behind closed doors, but like from what I could see, it was very performative.
And the drama last night, it typically unfolds in the House. Typically, the House is a little more rambunctious, a little more unruly. Yet the fireworks last night all went down in the Senate. It was wild.
There were some fireworks in the Senate. I was sitting in the room, and I got to say, I've never heard the gavel slammed as hard as it was by Stuart Adams last night. I don't think it came across on camera when I watched it back, but I want to take a look at this clip right now. This is State Senator Nate Bluin, who, important to note, he is running for Congress here as one of the Democrats in Utah's newly formed District 1. This is the entire thing we're fighting over right now and why we're in a special session. And he gets up to explain one of his no votes, I believe on changing some court processes. And here's what happened.
To big companies while Utahns can't afford health care, and we're protecting the power of the special interest groups who are working behind the scenes to exercise control over our daily lives while constituents are evicted from their homes
Senator,
and face life without a roof over
Senator
their
Bluin.
Head. It strikes
Bluin.
Me as
Senator
ironic
Bluin.
That we can
Senator
change
Bluin.
The rules.
I'm asking, we have a point of order. You need to wait for the point of order. Senator McKell.
I can't hear anything that he said that relates to this bill. I can't hear anything that's relevant to this bill, what he just said. That's a great campaign speech, but it's not relevant to this bill.
I'm going
to
rule you out of
order,
so thank you. It doesn't sound like it pertains to the bill.
It fundamentally pertains to why this bill is on the floor. We are protecting the subsidies.
And he kept going.
Yeah, he kept going there. That gavel, I was like looking down at my computer and the gavel bang, and I would just like shot right up.
It's a big gavel.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was a mighty gavel from President Stuart
so
Adams.
Just like a point of order in this conversation, right? Like our expectation from the Senate is that everything they're talking about is germane to the bill.
Yes.
Right? So I want to be like anyone who's watching national news. Right. Senators in the U.S. Senate get to just talk about whatever they want, whenever they want. Mm-hmm. But in our Senate, there's a germane, it's not an expectation, it's actually a requirement.
A requirement of a process. Yeah, legislators are allowed to explain their vote, right, when a bill does come up for a vote. In the Senate, votes are a verbal, right? They go through the roll call, they do a verbal vote, and senators have a chance to explain that vote if they would like, and that's what Senator Bluin was doing last night, I think reading some talking points, Bernie Sanders texted him. What happened after the video we just watched, he did not stop, right? President Adams had to gavel him again and again, and then he got the infamous double gavel and was censured by the body actually for not complying and following process. So a little bit of drama there, but yeah, absolutely. Senator Bluin is on the campaign trail.
Yeah, an example, I think, of how tensions are high, too, when it comes to redistricting. I mean, and that's really my takeaway from last night, too, is not just that, you know, we pass these policy changes, which some are arguing are just minor changes that don't really have a ton of implications. But it was more, you know, the drama of the voter groups showing up and being vocal and pushing back. And then you had this tension between Democrats and Republicans on the Senate floor and those running for Congress in this new district and whatnot. So just kind of a lot of angst, I felt like, last night.
Yeah, and Lindsay, I was watching you obviously on ABC4 yesterday when I was watching the news, and it was loud behind you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so, and I guess I feel like that doesn't usually happen in a special session, or that's what I mean. So it was like performative, all of it, right?
Both
like,
sides,
so you've got the people performing, but you've got the protesters showing up and performing, much more felt like a regular session kind of day, right?
Yeah.
But
so,
Taylor, correct me if I'm wrong about
no,
that.
No, you're like, absolutely right. It did feel rowdy. It felt a little more intense, high pressure, high stakes. Felt, even though, as Lindsay mentioned, right, all of these decisions had been made, the final versions of the bills had been negotiated painstakingly over days and weeks going into this. So there was no doubt about what was on the agenda and whether or not it would pass. The real drama was every legislator had to take an opportunity to go on the record with their comments in response to what's happening with redistricting. Boy, we had a lot of Federalist Papers references last night. We had a lot of quotes from various political and, you know, thinkers, influencers. Legislators started off almost all of their remarks by quoting someone else, right? Which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, it no surprises in the end. Still some drama.
Okay, let's talk about some of those remarks. In that, the legislature passed a resolution condemning both the Utah Supreme Court and the lower court judge here for some of the processes in this redistricting case. We know they have been highly critical of the time it's taken to get the ruling. And they also criticized the Utah Supreme Court for what they called novel legal theories. Guys, I just want your take on the process. First of all, a resolution has no teeth. It's just a strongly worded slap on the wrist. But what does it say that the legislature felt the need to take this action?
Well, one, I think we've been talking about this for a while, right? Like, clearly these two institutions are having beef, right? So between the judiciary and the legislature, they are not getting along. They're clearly laying out territory and having an argument. But I also think, don't you think a little bit, and then I would leave this to Taylor because he's the expert in this area, but they're all also running too, right? So they're going to pass this resolution so they can have some language that they can put on a flyer that they send home that says, in this redistricting conversation, however it goes, that's going to be good content for their campaigning, I think, right? So a little bit, even though it doesn't have teeth, it does have some political play.
Before I go to Taylor, though, Leah, I want your political science professor mind here between the two branches. Like, I mean, obviously there are checks when the legislature doesn't like a ruling from the Supreme Court. You appeal it, right? And ultimately that's what they're trying to do. But here they are pushing back some deadlines and changing some rules in order to help their appeal. Meanwhile, condemning the actions officially of the judiciary. Does that rise to any issue in your political science mind?
Separation of powers. Yeah, no. I mean, my answer on this is interinstitutional warfare. So if anyone was quoting Federalist 51, that should have been something they talked about.
I'm sure someone did.
Right. These branches are supposed to battle.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, the court has the higher authority. It's got the mystique of the robe. They get to do judicial review. But, you know, the legislature's got all of the game when it comes to political theatrics, right?
Yeah, so they set their rules.
Right. And they set their rules and how they're going to talk. And they're more often talking to journalists, you know this, probably judges don't talk to as much as members of the legislature. So a little bit how I read it is this is a fight, and they are bringing the tools that they each have in their toolbox to bear as they go after each other.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't impeach, so there's that, I suppose.
And I'm happy about that. Yeah. I mean, I think all of the criticisms about Judge Gibson, her process, her timeline, I do think there are some good points there. I'm not necessarily saying they're correct, but the legislature, what they're doing, what they did last night, is they claim that because they just barely received the final ruling from Judge Gibson, I believe just last week or the week before was the final ruling.
No, they don't have a final judgment. That's their whole issue right now.
Right, again, yeah.
They got to stay.
It's messy,
yeah.
But this is what they're saying,
yeah.
Right? What they're saying is they haven't had any time here because They claim Judge Gibson has intentionally abused the timeline here in the process in order to put them in a corner, to tie their hands with the timeline. So they passed legislation last night to buy more time, right? To put off
the
congressional filing until March. That would then allow the legislature to do their full repeal to the Utah State Supreme Court. And then if denied there, maybe even SCOTUS, right? That's what they're doing here.
But what is the evidence that she did this on purpose?
But they don't have to have that evidence, right, Lindsay? So they feel that they were backed into a corner. And whether I would not say what her intentions were at all, but clearly they were backed into a corner, right? Like she waited a minute to make the decision. The decision came down that night at like 11:50 at night.
I think that's a point of evidence right there. Judge Gibson was loose with the timeline. I'll make that argument.
Right. But I would argue she clearly, again, they are having a conversation. They are in a fight, right? And so she's using the tools she has, which includes time. So they are now trying to get more time back, but they don't have to prove anything.
Right. That's
right. They just kind of
can just accuse each other publicly.
Right, exactly.
Because she's right. She's written in her rulings things that the legislature is saying that aren't true in her mind. Right. She's saying any public assertion that I delayed this on purpose is false.
Ruling schmooling, Lindsay. Okay. We're going to figure out a way to win this thing. Okay. The legislature's not giving it up.
Bar Association, like people are coming to her defense. Right. So everyone is kind of lining up on both sides of this argument.
Yeah. Well, let's not pretend that both sides aren't political in a way, and I'm not disparaging the court. I think Judge Gibson is probably
smarter than you,
crazy smart, a lot smarter than me. That's a low bar. Probably a wonderful person, in my opinion. I kind of see her acting as an activist judge. I can see those arguments. I think there's some merit there, and this is a political process. The process of drawing maps is a political one. Right. And even interpreting the state constitution is political, and that evolves over time. So I have no problem with appealing that ruling. I'm glad we didn't try to impeach. There's no need to be punitive or mean to each other here.
But don't you think in her retention election?
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
Right. So a little bit. I don't think you need to impeach because Utah uses retention elections.
Right.
And I imagine they run against her.
Well, and this goes to your point earlier, Leah, about the politics of legislators and what they, you know, wanted to say last night. Let's not forget that Prop 4 back in 2018 only passed in 26 of Utah's 29 counties, right? It passed in Salt Lake County, Summit County, and Grand County. And so all these legislators last night are speaking on the record saying their voters opposed Prop 4. Their voters didn't want this. Their voters, their constituents, did not vote for this. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fairly compelling talking point, and I think we're going to see more of that going forward.
Yeah, we'll have to watch for the appeal from the Utah legislature. I checked the case file today. They have filed a new, they're asking for that final ruling to be expedited quickly, and there's some drama with the plaintiffs in terms of the plaintiffs are saying there are outstanding claims in this case, so we can't actually file this final ruling yet. So I'm waiting for the judge to kind of respond.
Seems a little sus.
No, they're accurate. That's accurate. So I'm waiting for the judge to respond.
How much more time do y'all need?
Because she's already said once in the stay filing from last Friday night that she cannot issue a final judgment yet. She has said that. And so I'm curious what she comes back to say now that they've formally asked for an expedited final judgment. So I'm waiting on that.
Whatever she says, they won't like it.
Yeah, that's probably
guaranteed.
Fair. Yeah.
Wait, that's true.
We'll be back here on Tuesday talking about it again.
Fact check that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the other thing we did in the session is repeal HB 267. This is the ban on collective bargaining. I think the biggest criticism, and I talked to the Senate Majority Leader about this, was just the notion that, all right, this was supposed to be on the November ballot. So is, if they gather enough signatures, the proposition for repeal. A lot of people speculating that bringing out all those teachers and firefighters and the public, you know, employees that we support so much as taxpayers because our money pays them would also have an effect on Prop 4. Taylor, what do you make of that argument? Do you sense that? The Senate Majority Leader said to me it was more just about too many things on the ballot being too crowded.
I think both things are true. Number one, I will say I think this is wonderful. I think this is how the process works. A lot of credit, right, to the union folks, the folks behind the referendum. Their referendum effort was unmatched. It was unprecedented here in Utah. None of us, when I say none of us like Republicans or lobbyists or even the legislature, no one thought they could actually pull it off. They did, and in spectacular fashion.
Right.
That, I think, was an ultimatum from Utah voters. Legislators took it seriously and responded to it by repealing the bill last night. So that's a win. That, and credit to everyone involved, the sponsors, Senator Colmore and Representative Tusher, but most credit to those folks, the union folks, right? UEA and others. They won a lot of credit. We'll see how long the win lasts. However, I do think it's true that, you know, in a midterm general election on the ballot, what you don't want to do is recreate 2018, right, where you had medical cannabis, Medicaid expansion, right, and Better Boundaries Prop 4 all on the same ballot and get Ben McAdams elected to office, right?
It will be interesting to see because the GOP right now uses the argument it only passed by 50.3%. It'll be interesting to see what Prop 4 can do on its merits. Now, at the same time, the GOP has raised $4.3 million to fight this battle, so they're dumping a ton of money into this fight, which they didn't do in 2018.
Right. Well, and, you know, had they put in any effort whatsoever, you know, I believe that ballot measure probably would have failed. Like you said, it barely passed. It only passed in three of Utah's 29 counties. But, you know, never underestimate. I love you, Rob Axon. Never underestimate the power of the Utah Republican Party to screw it all up. Okay? They're going about doing this the wrong way. They don't need signatures. We don't need $4 million from an out-of-state super PAC. We just could put it on the ballot by a legislative vote. But for some reason, we're overthinking it.
I would just add a little bit. I want to just elevate the 2026 election might look very similar to the 2018 election. Yeah. I think we are kind of talking offline, right? 2026 is incoming. Elections that we were watching happen across the country. What seems to be happening to the Republican Party writ large, given what's going on with the economy, and that's a whole other conversation on a different day.
Yeah.
But if I were politically strategic, I would be watching that and going, this is not going to be a great, I think, election, at least now, looking forward, for any Republican initiative. Yeah. So I wouldn't want to be making that argument in that race.
And let's not forget, we already have a constitutional amendment on the ballot that was placed there by legislation last year. This is a legislation sponsored by Representative Jason Kyle, Senator William Fillmore. It would raise the threshold for any initiatives in the state to 60% if that initiative increases taxes or creates a new tax.
I forgot about that
one. You know the legislature wants that to pass. I think that's in jeopardy if we have some of the maybe air quotes wrong kind of ballot measures also on the same
ballot. Or competing claims.
Competing claims.
Right, so the thing is, like, who gets mobilized to go and vote, what they are angry about when they show up to vote.
And it's confusing. The more ballot measures that are on the ballot, the more confused voters are, the less likely they are to actually go down the ballot and vote for all of them. It's really hard to message, really hard to campaign when you have a crowded ballot.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see how, you know, if we're like the point of view of initiatives right now, like has the public changed their tune on what initiatives are, what they do, and why they want them, given this fight we've been having over redistricting?
Polling shows the answer is yes.
Okay.
80%, and these numbers are rough, you'll have to forgive me. This is based on some polling done by Noble Insights the last quarter. Perhaps I can share and we can post those for our viewers. But roughly today, about 80% of Utah voters strongly support the right of initiative and referendum here in the state of Utah. However, if you ask voters how they feel about out-of-state money paying for those efforts, 67% of Utah voters strongly oppose initiatives funded by out-of-state groups.
So it's the money, not the initiative.
It's the support. You know, voters think that right is important, but only if it is an effort led by, supported by Utahns. And Utahns are worried that our initiative process could be co-opted by out-of-state groups. And that's what we've seen, frankly, both on the right and on the left. I think that's a problem. And again, Leah, I know you love direct democracy, but not it's not great in every way. I mean, look at California, look at these other initiative states that are essentially governed by initiatives.
Can we not do both? Can we not have direct democracy and be represented?
Well, we were up until the Prop 4 sued about it and ruined it for everybody.
But here's what I'm going to say, because I think I've said a couple times on this show, Taylor.
Sorry.
So I am not a huge fan of direct democracy. I actually thought the conversation...
I'm sorry. I was misrepresenting your position there. I was being sarcastic.
I thought the conversation was going to get to the point... Right, that we would be talking about a constitutional amendment to change initiatives based on what happened with this whole redistricting.
We will get there.
Yeah, but okay, go ahead. I was going to say, but it doesn't feel as imminent to me. Does that, like, I thought
no,
we were
that's
gonna...
coming because they are planning based on, you know, they're running another ballot initiative to deal with the Supreme Court ruling from 2024 that said the legislature can't change initiatives unless they're narrow in scope and they have a compelling government reason.
Right. But it's not a conversation about wholesale.
About direct
getting
democracy.
Right. So I thought we were going to go to, this is a hot mess. This is ridiculous. 60% is not even enough. Mm-hmm. Forget it. Let's just have a republic like we're supposed to have.
They seriously looked at that, Leah. Right. They considered that. They explored that. However, that polling information that I just shared really had an impact on them deciding against it.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Because our state constitution right now does say that people have the right to alter and reform their government. So we would have to change that to...
The legislature could just put a constitutional amendment on the ballot to eliminate the right of initiatives in Utah.
Correct.
We didn't put it on there until, what, 1916, right?
I don't know.
It was a populist-led effort. So, you know, not all states have it. If it's not useful and it's more creates more problems than benefits now, then, you know, we'll see.
So the answer to if you don't like what your lawmakers are doing is just vote them out in lines that are drawn by people who hold the office.
Hey,
is that what you're saying?
We are not dealing with legislative maps right now.
Yeah, but don't do the redistricting real quick. The problem I also think for my argument is House Bill 267 being repealed demonstrates the power of placing an initiative on the ballot to get the legislature to listen.
Yeah.
Seems very not persuasive to get rid of it, right? Like, so we don't need to have the redistricting conversation. The other conversation that's happening at the same time seems to prove the point.
Good point, Leah. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there. I thank you both for your insights today. It has been fabulous. Any last thoughts on the special session? What happened? Anything I missed that I did not cover? Because I was in five shows yesterday.
Go and watch the video of Kathleen Reby getting herself in a little bit of trouble on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
Wonderful person. Bless her heart. Just not a good strategy in what she tried to do last night.
She tried to pass an amendment to say, let's lower the signature thresholds for these congressional candidates who are going to file now because they have less time to file. And Republicans were like, no.
And she's running.
And she's running for the office.
Called her out for not declaring a conflict of interest. President Adams also pointed out that Derek Kitchen, former senator, was also on the floor. So we had a few Democratic Senate candidates all... jockeying for attention last night.
Well, shameless plug, Derek Kitchen will be on Inside Utah Politics this Sunday.
I didn't even know that.
See how I did that right there? That airs Sunday at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., so we'd invite you to watch that on ABC4. We will, of course, discuss this session further and in more detail and other political issues that are bubbling up this week. We didn't get to any more because I just love this discussion today.
Utah stuff, Salt Lake City police stuff,
the NIL
Norris
deal
stuff.
Is interesting.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, lots to talk about.
Notre Dame's decision to miss the bowl game.
Notre Dame's decision.
I mean, big issues we didn't get to this
time. Pop-Tarts bowl. That is my dream bowl.
First of all, it's like a fun bowl.
It's an honor.
Could you imagine the U of U logo with the Pop-Tart sprinkles on the helmet?
It's
my dream
to go to the Pop-Tarts bowl. Maybe we're not playing with Notre Dame anymore. Let's just have that.
You know, I tell our students, Leah, join a party. Pick a party, join it, make it better, make it what you want. Notre Dame,
join a conference.
Pick a freaking conference and join it already. Something weird.
Rant over. Producer Peter, I didn't even introduce you and say that you're back from London.
I'm
so
back
happy
from
to
vacation.
Have you here.
I said hi at the top
He's
of the episode.
So calm
I
and happy, he, relaxed.
Well,
oh
he
my goodness.
Is happy now because he got out
last
of this
for
place.
Weeks. I
he has
feel
to work
wonderful.
On making him angry again. That's our goal.
Well, just a few days in this office and the
no,
stress
worry.
Will start.
The first day I was back in the office, we had a special session of the legislature. It was a joke.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Welcome back, my friend. I sent him the call via text and I was like, welcome back. All right. Thanks for joining us this week. We will see you next week.